Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal. I'm going to speak today with a pair of authors from the Netherlands, Groningen in particular. Patrick Niebuhr is an orthopedic fracture surgeon there who also does trauma care at the University Medical Center. And Mike Heiskes, his collaborator, who is an assistant professor at the University of Groningen and also a conversation analysis. The two of them are co-authors with a number of others in a paper coming out in the June issue of Medical Education entitled Recruiting Expertise, How Surgical Trainees Engage Supervisors and Regulate Learning. Mike and Patrick, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
I'll try to bounce back and forth between you, but please feel free to pass answers to one another as you desire. And given the introduction I just named, with Patrick being a surgeon and Mike being a conversation analyst, I can't help myself but want to start with asking you about how the two of you came together. This seems like an ideal complementary relationship in terms of bringing some clinical and frontline expertise together with a particular theoretical background. So do you mind telling our listeners a little bit about how this collaboration got started?
Well, yes, for me, it started because I was thinking about doing a PhD, being in medical education for a long time and being a clinician. I thought maybe it's time to try to combine medical education and research together. And then I was making some videotapes of surgical procedures. And then I thought, yeah, and now what's the next step? And then Debbie Jaarsma, who is the head of the LEARN, that's the Department of Medical Education in our university hospital, introduced me to Mike. And then we had our first meeting.
Yes, I had been collaborating with the orthopedic department before, looking at consultations of inexperienced surgeons or surgical trainees and consultations of staff members. And I compared them in the way they structured their consultation, how they used empathy, how they used the computer, how they did treatment recommendations, etc. And I found many differences between them in style and the way they carried these consultations. So I was very fascinated between this learning trajectory that medical professionals go through during their training. I looked into that and then also found out that a lot of the training of medical professionals is actually in terms of goals rather than activity. So I thought from my conversation analytical background, this very empirical and action-based, I could maybe contribute to the training of these medical professionals in communication training based on actual conversations. And then when I met Patrick, it also offered an opportunity to study training in the surgical environment of the OR, which also has very nice theoretical implications for me when looking at intersubjectivity and the way people collaborate together in this high-pressure, complicated environment.
And so, Patrick, you mentioned that you were filming procedures or filming interactions between learners and surgeons. What was it about those observations that gave you a sense that there was something that needed to be more deliberately understood, either through the pursuit of a PhD or otherwise?
Well, yes. Well, the basic question for my PhD was, we've been trained in the workplace. Everything takes place in the workplace. And there's so little explicit learning and so much implicit learning. But is it really effective? Well, it is, because we do it for centuries now. But it might be more effective if we understand how it works. So I got interested in some of the medical educational theories and backgrounds. And then I always came to the point that this is workplace-based learning. It works, but we don't understand how it works. Bring this back to my work as a clinician, but also as a trainer of surgical trainees. And I remember one of the first wake-up call. I was a six-year resident or surgical trainee, and I had to assist and supervise a second-year trainee in a procedure. I asked him, how many procedures did you do already? He said, around five. Then I said to him, wait, let's do it this way. It was on call, and it was in the night hours. Normally, you more or less manipulate tissues and help the other one through these surgical procedures without noticing him. So this is one of the strategies we used to do. But I said to him, I do nothing unless you say what to do. So I brought myself into the position of a real assisting the surgeon and not supervising the surgeon. And then he had to ask me to do the right things. But I noticed how hard it was not to intervene, because naturally you go along and try to help and make it easier for the other one. And you know the scripts, and he didn't know them with the same expertise as you did. So we had this position that I tried to hold on to my appointment with him, that not doing anything, but it was very hard. And then we had some sort of a standstill during the surgical procedure. He was saying nothing to me and I did nothing, which was interesting because everything in my mind said, help him out, do it. No, I had to wait. And then I remembered afterwards that it was very hard to try to let somebody learn the real thing. It's so easy to get into this collaboration mood to doing the right thing for the patient. And I still think you can do the right thing for the patient, but be as a supervisor more awaiting than proactive. And then you force the other one more in trying to get to the threshold of his experience and learn more. So this was one of these moments that I thought, well, there must be something we can do, but how do you do this?
Yeah, and so what you've just described, I think, summarizes very well the first phrase in your title, which might not be immediately obvious to people in terms of recruiting expertise. So the focus of this study became, how are the learners themselves requesting the expertise of the expert clinician? Did you create these videos deliberately looking for that, or was it something that just seemed to emerge from the interactions that you were observing?
Now, that's a very good question because, well, I was just looking from a clinical point of view. And one of the things I learned from Mike, that there's a complete other way to look at things. That's the conversation analysis way. Maybe you could address more about what the big difference is in looking at the reality as I see it and as you see it.
I think we didn't record these procedures with this particular aspect of these interactions in mind at first hand. So we really came to it from an inductive perspective. So we recorded them because we were interested in how this implicit process or explicit process of learning took place in the everyday practice of the OR. And then we recorded them and we coded the different activities that we saw happened in these collaborations. And basically, there were two kinds of strategies that we saw, and one ended up in this paper, and that was, at what moments do these surgical trainees explicitly recruit or implicitly recruit expertise from their supervisor? So when do they take the initiative to recruit expertise from the supervisor? And at the moment, we're working on the other side of the coin of that question. At what point do supervisors volunteer information or expertise, either in suggesting or correcting or taking over, to these surgical trainees? So we weren't interested in this from the start, but it was something that sort of inductively emerged from our analyses of the data. So it was, we didn't have a code book beforehand. We just analyzed these interactions and then inductively came to these categories and described them.
But for the perspective, it's very important to realize that all kinds of linguistic forms and nonverbal forms were being used by surgical trainees or their supervisors. And you just look at this wide variety of actions. And one of the things Mike learned me is to look at these actions that you can actually categorize and then need to analyze them to get a grip of what can be the meaning of an action of a surgical trainee. So it took us, quite some time. How many years before we came into these fine categories?
I think it's, well, about 2 years, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and Mike, can I ask you to say a little bit more about what a conversation analyst does or what sort of lens you were bringing to this collaboration? I suspect more of our listeners know implicitly what it means to be a surgeon as opposed to what a conversation analysis would provide to this sort of activity.
Sure. So conversation analysis originated from sociology and was from the start interested in how people do everyday interactions and what kinds of activities and actions constitute everyday interactions, but not excluding the fact that everything is meaningful. So we're really looking at concrete behaviors, so linguistic signs, but also embodied behaviors, gaze, body posture, body orientation, etc., etc. And we're studying the normative practices that people use in their interactions. So from the perspective of communication for conversation analysis, I would look at these procedures as people collaborating and, of course, sharing a lot of professional knowledge, but they're not able to look into each other's minds. So the calibration and the collaboration and the intersubjectivity arising in surgical practice needs to be negotiated through visible linguistic and nonverbal signs. So we would study the ways people would show each other how they understand each other, how they show what kinds of activities they are engaged in, whether they think these activities are actually going okay or whether some types of adjustments are needed. So we would try to identify concrete behaviors that people use to locally construct these collaborations. So we would try to identify verbal practices, like, for instance, one of the things we identified in the paper is surgical trainees might ask, do I need to drill a little bit deeper, asking sort of a yes or no question, which would be inviting the supervisor to give their opinion. But they also could state it as an opinion of their own and then ask for confirmation. I need a little bit to drill a little bit more deep, right? So then the supervisor has to say yes or no. But he could also say, what should I do next? So these different verbal practices of recruiting expertise from these supervisors, we try to identify and then try to look at the effects of these different practices on the procedure and how they affect learning, collaboration, and how they maybe constitute learning in these environments. So we're constantly moving back and forth from concrete behaviors, the responses these concrete behaviors get, and the effects on these first pair parts and second pair parts on the ongoing interaction.
Thanks very much. Patrick, when I look over your results and start trying to understand the different ways in which the students were recruiting the expertise of the surgeon to facilitate their own learning, you in the paper note that there were four major categories of ways in which people did that. One of the things that stood out to me was that each of those categories seemed to include an evaluative component, as though students were calling on the expertise to facilitate their own learning, usually when they want to offer or receive some form of evaluation of what they were doing. Is that a fair representation, and was it something that was surprising to you?
Well, I'm not sure if it's the place to compliment you, but I think you make a very good point here.
I'll take it anytime.
Yeah, well, good point, Kevin. Well, one of the things Mike said in the beginning, when we first look at those videos, he said, well, these are all assessments. Assessments is a CA term for a evaluation being represented by language or embodiment. And when Mike was answering the previous question, I thought maybe I could add two things. I mean, the meaning of working together as a supervisor, surgical trainee in OR is very interesting because they both have to get to a good patient result. So a lot of collaboration is in the perspective of getting the good patient result. My own experience being a surgical trainee and also being a trainer is that it's always an assessment of your actions, the whole operation when you're a trainee. I mean, giving no response or the response is that is a meaning to you that you can continue your procedure. So there's a lot of implicit evaluation of my qualities as a surgical trainee. So this evaluation assessment perspective you bring up here has different sides as well. And yes, for some reason, the whole learning and collaboration is concentrating on what task did we just execute and was it good enough? So in this evaluation, the surgical trainee gives you as a supervisor, there's a lot of information about how he is interpreting the information, how about his plan for the next action and all that kind of thing. So this evaluation is, I think, the key in our paper. Yes, you're spot on with this.
And Mike, you mentioned even in just describing your own role early on that part of that is trying to think through how to use findings like this to help improve educational practices. Given what sounds like your uncertainty as you're going through the analysis about why or the surprise that these were all built around assessment sorts of interactions, what does somebody in your position do with this in terms of now turning it around and trying to help improve surgical training?
So the thing very surprised at, or what interests us most, is that we found that learning is not very explicit in these encounters. So it's like you said earlier, it's all based around implicit evaluations. And even when a supervisor isn't saying anything, he's still giving an evaluation of the situation as everything is going okay. And only in very few instances is explicit learning happening. But these are always triggered around these local assessments of the situation. So sometimes there's an assessment by the surgical trainee and the supervisor will pick up on that and then expand into learning and provide a heuristic or a rule or a best practice. And then you could speak of actual learning. So one of the things we are trying to do in identifying these actual implicit and explicit learning behaviors. We try to make these professionals more aware of the fact that actually learning is taking place all the time. So we are making them aware of the strategies trainees use to recruit these expertise. And in being more aware of these strategies, supervisors will be more apt to respond to them and actually make sort of an evaluation of the learning needs of these trainees. And what we try to do is develop trainings, and we're actually in the process of doing that. And we've done a couple already of training surgical trainees and supervisors, also especially supervisors, based on these concrete research materials in identifying these strategies. So we will confront them with the actual recordings and have them make little analyses of fragments, evaluate them, and then tell them our findings and our view on what learning in the OR constitutes and how it's done in real life. And we hope by increasing this awareness and metacognitions, we can enhance and optimize learning in the OR in the end. That's the ultimate goal. But of course, we're only starting with that process. So, but that's the ultimate goal, developing concrete trainings based on actual recordings to optimize learning in the OR.
Right, interesting. And Patrick, I'll just ask if we can move towards wrapping up by asking you what your thoughts are in terms of the next steps for this research, given that you're at least still contemplating a PhD. One of the things that really struck me in your conclusions was the phrase that the trainees' actions are provoked by the moment they experience insufficient expertise. It seemed to suggest that it creates an opportunity for the supervisor to be a bit more explicit and interact. And I wonder if you're seeing already some ways in which you as a clinician can start to be more deliberate about how you take advantage of those particular moments.
Well, one of the reasons for my PhD was that I tried already to adapt my level of guidance to the surgical trainee's expertise during the surgery. When I think, well, I can give him more autonomy, then I will try to be more on the assistant part of my role as a supervisor. And that's how I more or less during surgery try to adapt to the level of expertise for specific parts. So one of the points we made is that this expertise recruitment and supplying by the supervisor is something you have to, well, experience during the procedure itself. And in my PhD thesis, this is only the side of the surgical trainee. We're up to closing a paper about what the supervisor actually does. And then we were interested in how, when they take initiative, what happens to their negotiation, or will they bring it in perspective of patient outcome or learning or teaching when they do one of the strategies we currently have identified. Interesting, though, when we give our results with footage to the surgeons themselves or the surgical trainees, they instantaneously recognize the implicit value of it. And when we make these things explicit, you see some sort of a brightening up in their eyes. Oh, this is what it's all about. Oh, we use probably this. So this translation, what we went to the real life, we iteratively get these four categories of the surgical trainees side. But when we feed them back to them, they understand. The challenge will be in training, though, if they can understand that there's a various form, linguistic forms, embodied forms, but that have the same meaning in terms of recruiting expertise or providing guidance. So, and this is what we actually are working along in the line of my PhD thesis as well.
It's wonderful. It sounds like you have a great opportunity to spin this off in a number of different directions, and you've certainly landed in a spot that appears clearly to be very fruitful. So I'll just say that I'm very much looking forward to seeing how this evolves, and I'm sure our listeners will want to know more too as you continue your data collection. For the details around this particular data set, again, I'll just remind them that they can find more information in the June 2019 issue of Medical Education. The paper you'll be looking for is called Recruiting Expertise: How Surgical Trainees Engage Supervisors and Regulate Learning. Thank you both for chatting with me, and again, congratulations on what appears very likely to be a productive line of research.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin, for the opportunity.